apple people, they're ripe fruit. He said, now green apple people, he said, those are people who are, for the most part, there are three things true about them. Number one, they're self-sufficient. Number two, they're very successful. And number three, they're pretty satisfied with their life just the way it is. They're not ready to respond to the gospel. They're not ripe for the gospel. And that's why they just not really, they don't really care about hearing anything about Jesus or anything else. He said, now here's the good news. He said, it's really not hard to see people who are the red apples in the world. He said, these are the people that have big problems. These are the people, their lives are falling apart. And he said, James, they're everywhere. We need to look for them the same place that Jesus found them. He said, think about where Jesus found these people. Sometimes they were up a tree. Sometimes they were beside a well. Sometimes they were sitting beside the road begging for somebody to pay attention to them. And he said, these are the people we need to be looking for, and these are the people we need to be going after. And I really processed that in my mind. We were up late that night talking. When I went to bed, I had that in my mind, and I thought to myself, you know, he's right. As I look back on my ministry, the ministry that God has given me, the people that I have seen come to Christ, for the most part, not always, but mostly, the people that I've come across that are open to the gospel and open to Jesus are not the up and out. They're the down and out. The people that are most open to the gospel are not the people who, you know, life is good, they're making good money, they got a good job, they're in good health, they got a good family, everything's going good for them. Their basic philosophy is, tell me why I need God. But it's the people who are what I call the desperate that are most open to the gospel. And you can imagine, being a pastor as long as I have dealt with a lot of desperate people in my life. And it's amazing to me how many people I've seen come to Jesus who under ordinary circumstances literally would never have given Jesus a second thought. But they're in desperation mode. Now, let me tell you what I've learned about people who are in desperation. I mean, and this may be some of you here this morning. If you feel one of the following three things, you're probably a desperate person. First thing I have found about desperate people is they're just hurting. They've got a problem. Their wife or husband just walked out on them. They've got a child going to hell in a handbasket, and there's nothing they can do about it. Or they've got a life-threatening illness, and they don't know if they're going to make it. And so they're really hurting, and maybe that's you today. And then it's compounded by the fact, not only are they hurting, but they feel helpless. They realize they finally got a problem they cannot solve. They've got a problem they cannot buy their way out of, and they can't beg their way out of. And then they feel hopeless. They really are convinced there's no way out. They're convinced there is no possible solution to their problem. Henry David Thoreau, the famous philosopher and author, once said, most men lead lives of quiet desperation. I believe that's true. Behind the doors of homes in my neighborhood and in your neighborhood are people who, it looks like on the outside they've got it all together, but they're really living lives of quiet desperation. Today we're going to study an encounter that Jesus had with a man who was absolutely desperate. And let me tell you, he had reasons to be desperate. He was hurting, and he was helpless, and he was hopeless. He was in the same place some of you are this very moment, whether you're listening to me in this room, whether you're watching this message by television, whether you're listening to this on the internet, you are desperate. You're about to file for bankruptcy. You're in the middle of losing your marriage. Two of my best friends I had in a former church I used to pastor just this past week lost the home they've had for 30 years, lost it. You have a son or a daughter who is helplessly, hopelessly addicted to drugs, and life is just not working out for you, and you'd be the first one to admit it, and you're desperate. Let me tell you the good news. Jesus specialized in people like you. Jesus loved to deal with people like you. If you're a guest of ours this morning, we're in a series that we started on Easter Sunday called On the Fringe. And what we've been talking about is this amazing fact that people that are on the outside looking in are the very people that Jesus went outside looking for. The people that we either tend to ignore or we tend to avoid or we tend to reject are the very kind of people that Jesus was gravitated to. that Jesus was drawn to, that Jesus wanted to deal with. And one of the reasons why this series is going to hit home with a lot of you in this room and a lot of you watching us by television and touch so many hearts is because so many times you're going to find yourself in this story. You're either going to read it, hear this story, and you're going to say, well, that's where I was once in my life, or you're going to say, that's where I am right now, or you need to remember this story because one day that's where you're exactly going to be. And one of the most amazing stories that we find in these desperate people, these people on the fringe, is found in the Gospel of John. If you brought a copy of God's Word, four Gospels, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, I want you to turn to the Gospel of John. It's the fourth Gospel, and I want you to turn to John chapter 9. We're going to study a man today who is not only desperate, it's even worse than that. He was born in desperation. Because you see, this man was born blind. Now, you need to get the cultural picture here. There's a night and day difference in how we treat people today with physical handicaps compared to the way they were treated 2,000 years ago. You know, today, you know, we've even got laws that say you've got to give special preferences to people that have physical handicaps, and you've got to, you know, you've got to reach out and you've got to help them. And I think that's a wonderful thing. But it wasn't that way 2,000 years ago. In the days of Jesus, if you had some kind of a debilitating condition, didn't matter what it was, blindness, deafness, leprosy, whatever it was, you weren't seen as a blessing. You were seen as a burden. You were seen as a curse. And what we're going to learn today from this incredible story is really good news for people who are desperate. Because where we see a handicap or we see a weakness, doesn't matter whether it's a physical weakness, an emotional weakness, or a mental weakness, where we see it as a burden, here's what's going to blow you away. When Jesus sees handicaps, and I don't mean just physical, I mean spiritual and moral and social and emotional. When Jesus saw it, he didn't see it as a burden. He saw it as a blessing. So if you're here this morning and you're saying, I'm desperate, man, did I ever come to the right place? Did I ever come to hear the right message? I want you to write this down. I just want you to take out the door with you this morning. You ready? The place of desperation, the place of desperation is the perfect setting for God's transformation. The place of desperation is the perfect setting for God's transformation. You're here this morning, and even though you're putting on your Sunday best and you wouldn't want anybody to know this, the truth of the matter is you're at the end of your rope. You've gone as far as you feel like you could go. You've got nowhere else to turn. I want to tell you what I want you to do. I'm going to give you some practical advice. If you're desperate this morning, you've got a problem you can't solve, a problem you can't buy your way out of, you can't beg your way out of, and you think there's no way you can ever, ever get through it or get over it or get beyond it, I just want you to do what a blind man did. Three things. Number one, believe what Jesus says. That's it. Just believe what Jesus says. Now, the way the story is introduced tells us basically all we need to know about this man. Verse 1, John 9. As he passed by, he saw a man blind from birth. This man was born blind. From the time that human hands pulled him from his mother's womb, this man entered into a world where the velvet cover of darkness had been pulled over the light of the sun. And a big reason for his desperation was isolation. Because think about this. Go back to, you're this boy growing up. Growing up as a child, nobody would play with him. Nobody would play with a blind kid. And a blind kid couldn't go out to play. He couldn't go to school. Couldn't be taught. Because remember, back in that day, there was no specialized education. There was no such thing as Braille. There was no way to learn to read or to write. And this man had a bigger problem. He wasn't just physically blind, as you're going to see in a moment. He was spiritually blind because remember, at this moment, he had never met Jesus. He didn't even know Jesus. That's why Jesus goes down to say this in verse 5. As long as I am in the world, I am the light of the world. Let me just stop and kind of give you a little side message here. That's an incredible statement. Go back now. You're 2,000 years ago. Jesus meets this blind man, and out of the blue, he says, as long as I'm in the world, I am the light of the world. You want to say, time out. What do you mean you're the light of the world? Hey, most of the world doesn't even know you exist. Most of the world doesn't even know you're alive. Most of the world doesn't even know your name. Most of the world has never laid eyes on you. And yet he makes this incredible claim, I am the light of the world. How do you explain that? How could Jesus say he was the light of the world? He'd only been alive 33 years and most of the world had never even laid eyes on him. Well, here's why. Back in chapter 1, John makes this astonishing statement about Jesus. He says in John 1:9, the true light, talking about Jesus, which gives light to everyone, was coming into the world. Now, you know what darkness is, right? Darkness is simply the absence of light. Well, if Jesus is the light of the world and Jesus is the one who lights up everyone, here's what Jesus was saying. The reason why I'm the light of the world is very simple. If you don't have me, you're living in spiritual darkness. You may not realize it. You may not know it. It may not occur to you. But if I'm the light of the world and you don't have me, you're living in spiritual darkness because light is the absence of darkness. In other words, here's what Jesus was saying. You may have 20/20 vision in your eyes, but you can be still be blind as a bat in your heart. Because you not only have eyes in your head, you also have eyes in your heart. And people who refuse to believe in Jesus don't have a physical problem. They've got a spiritual problem. They're not physically blind. They are spiritually blind. Augustine, the great Christian, was once approached by a pagan who had an idol. And he brought his idol to him and he said, Augustine, here is my God. Where is yours? And Augustine looked at him and said, I cannot show you my God. Not because there is no God to show you, but because you have no eyes to see him. What he was saying was, you got eyes in your head that can see, but the eyes in your heart are blind. Now, as we read this story, I want you to keep in mind, Jesus is not just dealing with physical blindness, he's dealing with spiritual blindness because this man had a deeper problem because people believed back then if you had some kind of a physical disability, it must be either because you did something wrong or your parents did something wrong or your grandparents did something wrong. But so there was not just something physically wrong with you. If you had a physical handicap, people would look at you and say, all right, what did you do to deserve that? What did your parents do to deserve that? What is spiritually and morally wrong with you? What's the problem inside of you? That's why Jesus goes on to say this in verse 2. His disciples ask him, Rabbi, who sinned, this man or his parents, that he was born blind? That was the natural way you responded. If somebody was blind or somebody was deaf or somebody was lame or somebody was crippled or whatever, you would look at that person and say, okay, either you did something or your mom and dad did something. What did you do? Jesus answered, it was not that this man sinned or his parents, but now watch this, but that the works of God might be displayed in him. Now, even though Jesus healed blind people, the Bible says on at least 5 occasions, let me tell you why this is a very unique story. Did you know this is the only time that we ever read about in the life of Jesus that's on record where Jesus healed a congenital disease? This is a man that he didn't lose his sight after he was born. He was born blind. And so when people saw someone in this condition, they automatically asked the question, okay, I understand if you were blind because you were in an accident or somebody shot your eyes out or you accidentally put your eyes out or whatever, but you were born blind, so what did you do to deserve that? Because they just assumed that a physical handicap was a sign of God's spiritual displeasure. I love the story of this very devout follower of Jesus who went into a pet store. And she saw this beautiful parrot, and so she fell in love with it, and she wanted to buy it. Well, the owner was a friend of this lady, and he knew this lady had a real deep spiritual walk with God. And he said, Miss Smith, I can't sell you this parrot. And she said, well, why not? He said, well, he used to be owned by this real, real vulgar, wicked man. And whenever that parrot gets angry, he curses. He just curses up a blue streak when he gets angry. And I just don't really think you ought to buy the parrot. She said, look, I don't believe even a parrot is beyond redemption. And I want to buy the parrot. I'm going to have a spiritual influence on this parrot. And with God's help, I'm going to break him of that habit. Well, she said, I don't think you ought to do it. She said, I want to buy it. So she bought the parrot, takes the parrot home. The parrot hadn't been there 10 minutes. Something happened the parrot didn't like. That parrot began to curse, and he began to throw out, all kinds of vile words and obscenities and profanities. It would make Hollywood blush. It was so bad. Well, she looked at that parrot, and she said, I'm not going to have that kind of language in this house. I am a Christian woman. I have a Christian home. You're going to be a Christian parrot. We are not going to have that kind of language in our house. I'm going to teach you a lesson. I'm going to put you in the freezer for 30 minutes. Let's see what that does for you. So she puts the parrot in the freezer, 30 minutes. Half hour later, she pulls him out, the parent shivering uncontrollably, and he looks at that woman and he said, lady, I'm never going to curse again, but just tell me one thing. What did that turkey do? Now, that's what people thought. People thought, okay, if you got a physical problem, you got a spiritual problem. If you got a physical problem, you did something to tick God off. Now listen to what Jesus says in verse 3. It was not that this man sinned to his parents, but that the works of God might be displayed in him. Now listen, this is the big statement here. A place of desperation is always a setting for God's transformation. Jesus said, you don't get it. This man was not born blind because of something he had done. This man was born blind because of something God wants to do. This man was born blind. This man is a platform for God to do something amazing. Now, this next statement is going to sound so simple, but if you don't get what I'm about to say right now, you will not understand this story. You ready? This is important. This man was not blind because he couldn't see. He couldn't see because he was blind. Now that may sound real simple to you, but let me translate that into a spiritual truth, okay? Because people don't understand this. We are not sinners because we sin. We sin because we are born sinners. We're not born with God, and then somehow we lose God along the way. We're born without God. That's why we must be born again. Now, that's where the story gets really interesting, verse 6. Having said these things, he spit on the ground and made mud with the saliva. Then he anointed the man's eyes with the mud and said to him, go wash in the pool of Siloam, which means sent. So he went and washed and came back seeing. Now, I don't mean this to be in any way disrespectful of the Lord Jesus Christ. I really don't. But every time I read that story, I'm going to be honest. That's just gross. I mean, I'm going to be honest. Just the fact that he spit. Some of you moms are saying right now, didn't Mary teach him better? I mean, you don't spit. And I have to be honest. If you say to me, you know, Jesus could have just said, see, he could have seen, right? Jesus could have just touched his eyeball. He could have seen. Why does Jesus spit on the ground and make this mud out of his spit and cakes it on his eyes? I don't know. I really don't know. But think about what Jesus did. Out of the blue, without even asking this man for permission, Jesus makes this mud pie with his own spit, puts it on the man's eyes, and tells him to go wash in a swimming pool. Now, the next statement blows me away. Just blows me away. Verse 7. So he went and washed and came back seeing. Now, time out. Wait a minute. That's not the way this is supposed to work. You know, what's the old saying? Somebody say, let me fill in the blank. Seeing is believing. That's what we say. Seeing is believing. Not according to Jesus. According to Jesus, seeing is not believing. According to Jesus, believing is seeing. Big difference. If this man had said, what are you doing? Did I just hear you spit on, is this what I think's on my eyes? Why are you, I mean, do you not have any manners? I can't, what are you doing? I mean, are you making fun of me? You just put a spit mud pie on my eye. What in the world are you doing? He didn't even question that. If this man had said, go and wash off a mud pie, I'm not doing that. Are you lost your mind? Are you crazy? I don't understand what you did. I don't understand why you did it. And until you explain it to me, I'm not going to believe it and I'm not going to do it. If that man's attitude had been that way, he would have died a blind man. He didn't say, if I see it, I'll believe it. He said, I'll believe it. Maybe I'll see it. Now that raises a question. Why did he believe Jesus? He'd never met Jesus. He didn't know who Jesus was. Never had a conversation with Jesus. You say, yeah, why would he do that? Why would he let a strange man put mud, a spit mud pile on his eyes and go bathe in a swimming pool? Why would he do that? I'll tell you why. He was desperate. He was desperate. Nobody else had offered a cure. Nobody else had offered a change. Nobody else had offered an opportunity for this man to see. He believed what Jesus said. You know what that guy was? He was a red apple. He was ripe for the taking. That's why I say to those of you this morning living lives of quiet desperation, you want a way out of your desperate situation? If you want your place of desperation to become a setting of God's transformation, I'll tell you the first thing you better start doing today, you better start believing what Jesus says. You better start taking Jesus at his word. You better believe what Jesus says about you. You better believe about what Jesus says about himself. And you better believe what Jesus says about what he can do through you, in you, with you, and for you. Now, this is where the story really heats up and it really gets interesting. Matter of fact, it's kind of funny. Because when you believe what Jesus says, then and only then you receive what Jesus has. When you believe what Jesus says, then you receive what Jesus has. Now listen again to that statement in verse 7. So he went and he washed and he came back seeing. All right. Somebody tell me, this is a real easy question. What does a man with blindness need? What does he need? He needs sight, right? Okay, everybody got that, all right? What does a man in darkness need? He needs light. If you're blind, you need sight. If you're in darkness, you need light. So here is Jesus, now the light of the world, and he has given this man sight to his eyes, right? So here's a man born blind, probably been blind. I'd say the man's probably about 40 years old, about just kind of a guesstimate in my heart. Man's about 40, so for four decades, the man's been born blind. All of a sudden, the man can see. Now, what would you have expected at that point to have happened in the community? You say, well, I would think everybody'd be happy. I would think everybody would be throwing a party. I mean, you would have thought this would have blown up on Twitter. I mean, you would have thought this man would have been on the front page of the Jerusalem Times. You would have thought, I'm going to turn on my TV. He's going to be on Good Morning Jerusalem. He's going to be on Oprah. But you know what happens? He gets one question repeated over and over and over. Look, I want you to look, first of all, look how the neighbors responded in verse 8. The neighbors and those who had seen him before as a beggar were saying, is this not the man who used to sit and beg? Some said, it's he. Others said, no, but he's like him. Okay, the reason why they didn't believe it, because they just couldn't believe this had happened. And so he kept saying, no, it's me. I am the man. So they said to him, then how were your eyes opened? He answered, the man called Jesus made mud and anointed me and said to me, go to Siloam and wash. So I went and washed and received my sight. They said to him, where is he? He said, I do not know. Now, that scene blows me away. I just can't get over it. Here's a man that's born blind from birth. Probably, as I said, about 40 years old. He's a grown man. Four decades, this man's been born blind, right? And what's the response? Instead of celebration, they want an explanation. How did that happen? How did he do that? Well, how did the Pharisees react? Verse 13. They brought to the Pharisees the man who had formerly been born blind. Now, it was a Sabbath day when Jesus made the mud and opened his eyes. So the Pharisees again asked him how he had received his sight. And he said to them, he put mud on my eyes and I washed and I see. I'm telling you, it's amazing. Now, here are these religious leaders. They believe in God. They obviously should believe that God works miracles. But once again, instead of a celebration for what happened to this man, they want an explanation of how it happened to this man, right? All right. Well, then the whole crowd of Jews, they get involved. How do they respond? Verse 18. The Jews did not believe that he had been blind and had received his sight until they called the parents of the man and had received his, who had received his sight, and asked them, is this your son who you say was born blind? How then does he now see? How did this happen? His parents answered, we know that this is our son. We know that he was born blind, but how he now sees, we do not know, nor do we know who opened his eyes. Ask him. He is of age. He will speak for himself. Now, they bring the parents in for a time of interrogation and investigation. They ask him for an explanation. Look, He's your son. Yes, he's our son. He was born blind. Yes, he was born blind. Now he can see. Yes, he can see. He couldn't see for 40 years. Nope, couldn't see for 40 years. How did this happen? We don't understand it. Well, excuse the grammar. Mom and dad ain't having any of this. They're not getting involved. So we read in verses 22 and 23, why? His parents said these things because they feared the Jews, for the Jews had already agreed that if anyone should confess Jesus to be Christ, he was to be put out of the synagogue. Therefore, his parents said, he is of age, ask him. Now, you have to understand what a serious deal this was. If you were excommunicated out of the synagogue, if you were kicked out of the church, you'd lose your job, you could no longer be employed, your friends would disown you, you could never again go into the synagogue. You would die believing that your relationship with God had been cut off. When you died, you would not be even given a funeral. So these parents wouldn't even stand up for their own child. They said, we're not having any of this. So what do? They call this guy back to the witness stand because they're determined that their interrogation and their investigation is going to lead to an explanation, and a formerly blind, illiterate, uneducated man stands up in front of this group of the most knowledgeable, intellectual, religious people in the world. And I want you to watch this, what this guy does. That's why I love this guy. This is a guy, couldn't read, couldn't write, couldn't sign his own name, talking to those educated PhDs on the planet, and blows them away with one statement. Verse 24. So for the second time, they called the man who had been born blind and said to him, give glory to God. We know that this man is a sinner. He answered, whether he is a sinner, I do not know. But one thing I do know, though I was blind, now I see. I'm not going to argue about what I don't know. I'm going to tell you what I do know. Once I was blind and now I see. Now watch this. That man says something to the Pharisees that changed the whole debate. He said, let me tell you something. He said, you know what a PhD stands for? Phenomenal dud. He said, let me tell you PhD something. I am not going to sit here and try to explain to you what I don't know. And what I'm going to do is dwell on what I do know. I don't understand completely how this happened, but you can't deny that it's happened. I can't explain how, but you can't deny that it did. Now, let me ask you a question. Why did everybody else in this story, why did everybody else in this story refuse to believe in Jesus except this one blind man? I want some of you to hear this. Because their attitude was, until I understand everything I want to understand, and until I get every question answered I want to get answered, I will not believe. And they made a big mistake. They thought seeing is believing. They didn't understand that actually believing is seeing. And I want to tell you something this morning. If you're here today and you've never trusted Jesus Christ, and the reason why you've refused to believe in Jesus is because you've got some questions unanswered, you've got some issues you don't understand, and you've made up your mind, I'm going to wait until I understand everything. I'm going to wait until I get every question answered. I can already tell you something about you. You will never believe. Because seeing is not believing. Believing is seeing. Now, let me just tell you, it's kind of interesting. I came across this. I don't know how I came across it, but it's really fascinating to me. Robert Adair, you never heard of this guy, but he is the Sterling Professor of Physics Emeritus at Yale University. You know, brilliant guy, right? Well, he was talking about the physics of trying to hit a 90-mile-per-hour fastball. And he broke down the physical mechanics of what a batter has to do to hit a 90-mile-per-hour fastball, and he broke it down into three categories. He said, first of all, there's what he calls the looking. And according to Dr. Adair, it takes about 200 milliseconds for a batter, once the pitcher throws the ball, it takes him 200 milliseconds for the batter to locate the ball once it's released from the pitcher's hand. All right, that's the looking part. Then there's the thinking part. It takes another 100 milliseconds for that batter to decide, is it a fastball, curveball, slider, changeup, is it high, is it low, is it inside, is it outside? Then there's the action. It takes another 150 milliseconds for the brain to signal to the body to make contact with the ball and to actually swing the bat across the plate. So in the first 50 milliseconds, he can stop the swing, but after that, it's too late. Now, let me just kind of make this plain. What he's saying is he's added it up. He's done his study. It takes 400 milliseconds, 450. It takes 450 milliseconds for a man to try to hit a baseball that's coming at him 60 feet, 6 inches away at 90 miles an hour. Okay, everybody got that? Here's the problem. Do you know how long it takes for a fastball thrown 60 feet, 6 inches, 90 miles per hour to get across home plate? It takes 400 milliseconds. So add it up. It takes 450 milliseconds to hit the ball. It only takes 400 milliseconds for the ball to cross the plate. What is Dr. Adair's brilliant conclusion? It is impossible for a man to hit a fastball going 90 miles an hour. And yet people are paid $25 million a year to do what that guy says can't be done. Now, how dumb would it be for a batter, for a player making $25 million a year to say, I'm quitting my job. I'm giving this baseball up. Because until I understand how I can do that, I'm just not going to do that. Let me tell you something. Trust me on this. The Barry Bonds and the Alex Rodriguez and these guys, they don't care how they do it. They're just glad they can do it. And they gladly take that paycheck every single week. So the thing I'm trying to get you to understand is this. Can Dr. Adair explain how a batter can hit that ball? No, and neither can I. But you know what? Well, here's one thing. We can't explain how it's done. Here's what you can't deny. It's done every single day. I'm witnessing to two men at our church right now. They may be in this service, and they're skeptics. One was here Easter Sunday. One comes here almost every Sunday. They don't believe what Jesus says. They've not received what Jesus has. You know why? They think seeing is believing. When in reality, believing is seeing. And I've already told them, I will never be able to answer every question that you have. I'm going to tell you that right up front. I already know that you've got some things I can't explain. Okay, I want to say that right up front. If you want to come up here, if you want to play trick the pastor, not hard to win that game. Okay, I've been a believer for 51 years. I got news for you. There are still things in that book I don't understand. Don't get it. There are a lot of things about God I just don't get. So I'm just being honest with you. There are some things I can't explain. So let me just tell you right up front. You're sitting out there and you're going, well, I bet you can't explain this. I bet I can't. I bet you can't answer this question. I probably can. But here's what I also know. There are some things you can't deny. You can't deny. This is a book that has survived for thousands of years. And no other book has the world tried harder to get rid of than this book, and it is still the best-selling book on this planet. You can't deny that. You cannot deny that the same disciples that ran away from Jesus at his crucifixion gave their lives defending his resurrection. You cannot deny that there are 2 billion people in this world whose lives have been radically and totally and irrevocably changed and transformed by the risen Jesus. You cannot deny that every time we baptize someone in this church like we just did, that another life has been changed by the gospel of Jesus Christ. So there's some things I can't explain, but there's some things you can't deny. And so if you sit there and say, well, when I see it, then I'll believe it, then you'll never believe it. Because seeing is not believing. Believing is seeing. And when you say, I believe, then you'll see. This man believed what Jesus said, and because he did, he received what Jesus had. Recently, you know, we had our Good Friday service here. And after the service is over, there's three or four people that got saved, and a couple came up to join the church. There's this one man that came up to me. I've never met this guy in my life. This man comes up to me, and he says, hey, I want to join the church. And he said, I said, well, that's great. I said, tell me your story. It blew me away. First words out of his mouth. He said, 6 months ago, I came out of atheism. I was amazed. I said, well, what happened? He said, well, Pastor, it's real simple. He said, I tried everything else, and nothing else worked. And he said, I can tell you right now, atheism certainly doesn't work. And I said, well, what changed you? He said, when I just finally decided that Jesus was who he said he was, and Jesus did what he said he did, my most important questions got answered. And see, that's the way God works. When you believe what Jesus says, then you receive what Jesus has. That's the way it works. Now watch this. You're desperate today? Three pieces of advice. You believe what Jesus says, then you'll receive what Jesus has, and then you'll conceive who Jesus is. Now, look what we read in verse 35. Jesus heard that they'd cast him out, and having found him, he said, do you believe in the Son of Man? He answered, who is he, sir, that I may believe in him? Jesus said to him, you have seen him. Yeah, he has now. You have seen him, and it is he who is speaking to you. Now, watch this next statement. He said, Lord, I believe. And he worshiped him. I don't just believe. Oh, yeah, I know. I knew your voice. But now I see you. Yeah, you are the guy that healed me. I believe. And he worshiped him. Now, watch this. Because this man had responded to the first light that Jesus offered, go wash in the pool, he had received the full light of who Jesus was. Now, this is so important. I met with a man not long ago, and we were talking about how to become spiritually mature and how to spiritually grow. And I want you to notice how this man's faith progressed. This is really an amazing part of the story, and you'd miss it if you didn't read the story over and over and over. Because I want you to watch how this man's faith progresses in Jesus. Go back to verse 11. Notice what he says about Jesus. He says, the man called Jesus made mud and anointed my eyes and said to me, go to Siloam and wash. So I went and washed and received my sight. First thing he says about Jesus is the first thing most everybody says about Jesus. He's a good man. Right? He's a good man. This man made a spit mud pie, put it on my eyes. I went and washed. He said I'd see. I could see. He is a good man. First thing people say, right? When the Pharisees asked him about Jesus, he said this, verse 17. He is a prophet. So now he goes from saying Jesus was a good man. Now he says Jesus was a great man. Because you could not pay a person a higher compliment back in that day than to call them a prophet. Now look why this works. Same thing the world does. You've got a lot of people out there, oh, Jesus was a good man. Then you've got other people say, oh, no, no, no. He was a great man. Well, when the Pharisees came back to him a second time and asked about Jesus, he says this in verse 31. He says, look, we know that God does not listen to sinners, but if anyone is a worshiper of God and does his will, God listens to him. Never since the world began, now watch this, never since the world began has it been heard that anyone opened the eyes of a man born blind. If this man were not from God, he could do nothing. This man was right. Nowhere in the Old Testament, nowhere, and nowhere else in the New Testament do you ever read of anyone that was born blind ever, that had ever been completely healed of their blindness. As a matter of fact, you ready for this? Never in the history of the world do we ever read of someone that was congenitally born completely blind and then given the ability to completely see. It is what happened to this man in John chapter 9 is the only time this has ever happened in the entire history of this planet. And so this man, he says, must be from God. So now he's raising the ante again. He says, you know what? He's not just a good man. He's not just a great man. He is a godly man. Then we just read in verse 38, Lord, I believe, and he worshiped him. Now the full lights come on. Jesus, I get it. You're not just a good man. Oh, you are a good man. You're not just a good man. You're not just a great man. Oh, you're a great man, but not just a great man. You are a godly man, not just a godly man. You are the God man. I know who you are now. The reason why I know you came from God is because you are God, and I am going to worship you. Now watch this. When this man responded to the very first light that God gave him, God gave him more light. Here's where some of you are this morning. God's given some of you a little light, but it's enough light. You can't deny the impact of this book. You can't deny what happened to those disciples. You can't deny that that tomb is still empty and has been empty for 2,000 years and they've never found the body. You cannot deny that 2 billion people on this planet claim their lives have been transformed by a man who died 2,000 years ago. And you cannot deny the existence of the church you're sitting in right now. You've been given some light. And I'm telling you this morning, if you will respond to that little light, God will give you more light. But if you reject even the first light, you will never see the full light. So I'm going to wrap this up, and I want to just say this. Don't miss what happened to this man. You ready? Don't miss this. This is important. This man did not receive his sight because he was exposed to the light. I mean, if I brought a blind man in here right now, let's say we turned all the lights off, okay? We turn all the lights off in this building. And I bring a blind man in here. It's pitch black. It's dark. And I say to the guys back there in the booth, okay, guys, hit the lights. And we turn these lights on as bright as they can. Can that man see? Doesn't matter. No amount of light is going to help a blind man see. No amount of light affects blindness. You can put a blind man in broad daylight at noon. He will be just as blind as if he were in pitch darkness. All the light in the world will never help a blind man see. This man did not believe because he could see. He could see because he believed. And if you haven't accepted Jesus, you've never done that, I'm going to ask you to do something right now. Real simple. Make up your mind right now whether or not you're going to believe he is who he claimed to be, he did what he said he did, and surrender your life to him. If you're a believer, you say, I have seen the light. I've been delivered from the darkness of desperation. I've experienced this transformation. You've got a job to do. We've got a job to do. We need to go out here and find the people who are the red apples. Find the people who were born in spiritual blindness, just like we were all born in spiritual blindness. Go out here and find the people sitting beside the road, living lives of quiet desperation, and say to them, I've got light for you. I've got sight for you. And there's a lot of things I can't explain to you, but there's one thing I will guarantee you. You're blind today, but if you believe in Jesus, then you'll see. Let's pray together. With heads bowed and with eyes closed. You know,